to change our agenda just a bit. We will start with a work session on Senate Bill 74. We don't have anybody sign up for that public hearing, so we'll go into a work session. Senate Bill 435 has been pulled from the agenda today because work needs to be done on that still. We will also pull Senate Bill 785, which was scheduled only for a public hearing, and that will be heard later. So we will, after we have a work session on Senate Bill 74, we will go immediately then to a public hearing on Senate Bill 542. And I think that's what some of you are here for. So with that then, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 74.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 74 exempts statute requiring insurance coverage for PKU from automatic repeal provisions. We already had one public hearing on this bill, and at that time we discussed the Dash 1 amendment, which would add a new quote-unquote sunset clause to this measure and repeal that on January 2nd, 2009, and would add an emergency clause. However, since that time, we have drafted the Dash 2 and the Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 2 amendment adds an emergency clause to the original measure and clarifies that if this measure has not passed the legislature and the governor by July 3rd of 2003, that if it does so, it will apply retroactively to that date. The Dash 3 amendment would subject the statute to repeal on July 3rd of 2009 and also adds an emergency clause. Okay. So again, you have several options before you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move adoption of the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 74.
Okay, Senator Starr urges adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 74. Do I hear any objections to that?
No, that's what I want.
Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Bennett? Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Marquette?
Aye. Okay, the Dash 2 amendments have been adopted. Senate Bill 74.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 74 as amended to the floor. Is that right? Yeah, it goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 72 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the clerk and discussion, please.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I want to make sure that I've. This is a requirement already in the insurance statute. Now we're sunsetting, correct?
Go ahead.
We're removing the sunset.
Yeah.
Yes.
On that basis, I will support it. However, I do not support new mandates unless there has been an agreement reached and they can be put into effect with the agreement of the people involved with it, those purchasing insurance and so forth. But this is a mandate that's in our insurance and should not increase the costs that we're facing now, so I will support the removal of the sunset.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments? Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator Bennett? Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Marquette? Senator Marquette?
Aye. I will carry the bill. Yes, and the motion passes, five in favor and opposed. Thank you. Okay, with that, we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 542. Okay, we have a list of individuals who have come long distances, and Representative Bill Garrard, would you please come up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 542 requires periodic colorectal and prostate cancer examinations to be provided under health insurance policies.
Welcome.
Thank you, Senator. Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. I am State Representative Bill Garrard, a sponsor of a very similar bill on the House side, but I was delighted to see that the good Senator Morsette had sponsored a bill on the Senate side where we all know there is more sense. So, during four of our five special sessions of last year, this representative went to the floor of the House over 70 times with a catheter strapped either to my leg or hanging from my belt. This was a result of an already enlarged prostate that had swollen to over 3 ounces in size and that had cut off my ability to simply go to the bathroom. The catheter acted as a bypass. My blood PSA had moved from a 4 to a 25, indicating possible cancer of the prostate. So it was a very difficult time for me as we went through those five sessions. If you cannot, for a man, if you cannot urinate for a period of approximately 48 hours, you have a very good chance of dying. The alternative that I looked at was also the possibility of having prostate cancer, which I am also aware that members of this committee, some members, have faced. Since those five special sessions, I have had laser surgery correcting the problem, and that I did only have an enlarged prostate, and now have a completely normal life in regard to my urinary tract. All of this could have been prevented if I had gone and had a few simple tests allowing for discovery. And that's what this bill is all about. Many men simply have a real difficulty in acknowledging problems of the prostate. Yet almost 90% of all men over the age of 50 will encounter a prostate problem somewhere in their remaining years. If discovered early, most problems in regard to the prostate can offer full recovery. This bill will help that happen. This bill will save lives. I don't like mandates on insurance companies, but this one is necessary if it saves one life. I ask for your support of Senate Bill 542. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay, we have several individuals who have traveled long distances. June Miller and John. Would the Millers come forward, please?
I am June Miller from Pilot Rock, Oregon. I am secretary to the Pendleton Prostate Cancer Support Group. If we do not have regular automatic screenings for people, there will be some people just not do it. They have to make house payments, boat payments, you just name it. Prostate cancer, when it hits you between the eyes, is a devastating disease. It can rob you of hope, and it can take your very life. And my husband has been through this, and how well I remember the close call that he had. I do not need to go into detail about it, but it gives you no quarter. It is something that is on your mind 24/7. It is never out of your mind for a minute. This needs and deserves your support. We must have automatic screening for cancer. Any kind of cancer is horrible. They are all unrelenting. And I feel very strongly that if we continue to screen for this cancer, we can save many lives. But if we stop screening, All these cancers will be discovered at a later stage of development when they are incurable. We already have one member in our group who has bumped $300,000 keeping his medication going. He is 4.5 years beyond his expected demise. This is what happens when you catch it late. The expense is horrendous. The pittance of screening for prostate cancer anyway is nothing compared to what it costs when you go into 7 years or more of treating this recurrent cancer. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Questions? Thank you.
Sir. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Miller. I'm from Pilot Rock, and in 1989, I went to the doctor because I had a simple cough. Well, he wouldn't let me out of the office without a DRE, so fine, he found some lump. He sent me to the local urologist, and he says, well, we'll do a PSA test. Very simple. Now, I wasn't sick. That is my cough. I can still cough. That's no problem. But with the PSA test and biopsies, I had cancer, prostate cancer. The PSA was low. He says, simple case. We're going to whip it. Okay, he removed it. Radical surgery. Sounds good. But the cancer had already got out in the bed where the prostate lay. It hadn't gone anyplace, but it was there. And when you get cancer of the prostate, you don't have any symptoms to rely on. It isn't a lump in the breast or something like that. You have to rely on a test. And the people that don't take these tests, and I know of a number of them, they're young people. Their parents have died of prostate cancer, breast cancer, whatever. And you have to argue with them to have the test. That's all it is, a simple blood test. Everybody goes for a blood test. So anyhow, here it's already loose. We have an oreectomy, in case you don't know what that is. Well, that's removal of the testicles by surgery. They do it now with a pill. The last time I heard, one man was taking 3 pills a day at $9 a piece. Well, I don't, and your insurance is not going to pay for this. After that, it was 7 weeks of radiation. Now, from the first surgery to the second surgery was 14 days. From second surgery to radiation was 14 days. Then I had 7 weeks of radiation. My PSA is down now to 0, 0, 0, nothing but zero. It's been that way for the last 3 or 4 years. I feel fine. But without this test, I would not be here today because I wasn't sick. So it's imperative that somebody put some teeth in some laws to get these insurance companies to, most the insurance companies to pay for this. Most of the people that I have found with PSA, high PSA, they'll be working for years at some outfit, maybe a sawmill or something. They have health insurance. They take a physical once a year. Fine. They retire. Oh, forget that. I feel fine. So in the last 4 or 5 years before they die because of prostate cancer. That's all I can tell you. And I hope you consider passing this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. I appreciate your...
Any questions?
Thank you. Paul Zumach and Luther Fitch, would you come up, please?
Mr. Chairman and Senators, my name is Paul Zumach. I'm from Pendleton, Oregon. And my story is similar. I went in for a routine check, and after we were all done, I was ready to go. The doctor said, by the way, let's do this PSA test. We had already had the rectal exam, and he had said everything is normal, no problem with the prostate, but the PSA test came back fairly high. And he said, well, just as a precaution, let's do take a sonogram picture. And that showed the prostate a solid black, which it shouldn't be. And he said, I don't know what it is, but it's not cancer. And he was going to have me leave. And then as an afterthought, he said, well, let's do a PSA. That came back high. So they ran biopsies. Everyone was positive. And I had the radical prostatectomy. And when they did the lab work, the cancer was clear to the outside wall of the prostate, which they said meant that with just a few weeks, it would have been outside into the body, and it would have been too late. I'm alive because they just did a routine PSA test. I strongly support this bill and having that done and paid for by the insurance companies. And that's basically all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Yep. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you for being here. Questions? Okay. Luther Fitch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I started...
Identify yourself.
Luther Fitch. I started and facilitate a prostate cancer support group, started 4 years ago in Hermiston, Oregon. Worked closely with June and Jim Miller and Paul. We represent probably 200 people that now are in the two support groups. We also brought with us, and I think you have a copy of a resolution that we developed a year ago. It generally is supportive of this legislation. It speaks only to prostate cancer, but we're equally supportive of the colorectal cancer portion of this bill. We also brought you greetings and thanks also from several of our Eastern Oregon elected leaders, including the mayors of Pendleton and Pilot Rock, and from the chairman of the Umatilla County Commission, Bill Hansel. These folks have sent letters with us, and you have them now. We'd like to enter these into record at this time in their behalf. And I believe each of you has already received my own personal letter. I would just add very briefly to the comments. I'm the $300,000 man, and the meter's ticking faster every day. We didn't catch mine in time, and I'm 4.5 years beyond the time when I was supposed to be looking at the bottom side of grassroots. But I found some folks way out on the leading edge that were taking risks with themselves and their own practice and with patients. And I, with that kind of a diagnosis, which jerks you up real sharp, I went and sought them out. And I'm kind of the $300,000 experimental man. But it's been working. And had I had a PSA test, wouldn't have had to go through this. It was in the family, didn't know it. Nobody back then talked about anything but below their belt but their shoe size. And it slipped up on her blind side and notified all three of my brothers. And my younger brother, 8 years younger than I am, caught his just before it metastasized. I wasn't so lucky. I believe each of you has already received my own personal letter. The comments I would add is this. That which is familiar to us and commonplace becomes taken for granted, and as humans we simply adjust and accept, we become complacent. 2 years ago, we lost 3,000 lives on 9/11. The nation came out of its complacency and very appropriately rallied to this emergency. We're learning how to identify and screen for the bad guys. We haven't got it down to a perfect science yet, nor do we have screening for cancers down to a perfect science. But we're learning, and we're gaining. That same year, we lost 86,000 people to colorectal and prostate cancer combined. Last year, we lost 86,000 more. This year we'll lose 86,000 more. Too many of these are young people in their prime working and family years. Please, just because these cancers are all too familiar to us, let's not ever lapse into acceptance and complacency. We already have screening capability for these two cancers. As I say, they may not be absolutely perfect, but they're a whole lot better than they are for a lot of other cancers. We're learning how to do it better. Let's make sure we use the capability for our children's sake. I applaud you for scheduling this hearing. I urge you to continue to be proactive rather than reactive. It'll mean lives saved and money in the bank in the long run for both insurers and for the general public. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. I would like to add the letter from Mayor Bob Romig, City of Pendleton, Don Bensel, Pilot Rock, and Bill Hensel, the Umatilla County Commissioner. I'd like to get those into the record. And I really appreciate you driving this far, and we certainly will pay attention to your testimony. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to add to the record and testimony about this issue. I have personal knowledge and some experience with prostate cancer, and that my father will die with prostate cancer and not of prostate cancer. He was diagnosed 15 years ago and was told at the time that his was such a cancer that he would die with it, but not of it. And but my younger brother, who is 5 years younger, was not so lucky. And several years ago, he received the diagnosis of prostate cancer, went through radical surgery, subsequent treatments, and today he is living cancer-free. I believe that this is good legislation and that we should, in fact, because of overall savings to the insurance industry and to quality of life and life itself, for so many. I think this is good policy, and it's something we need to think about moving later. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Other comments? Okay, we will call John Powell, Cornelia Taylor, and Leonard Hagen, please. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. And with me today is Dr. Cornelia Taylor, who is a medical director for Regents and a clinical professor of medicine at OHSU. So she wears two professional hats. Also with me is Leonard Hagen, manager of government affairs for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hagen is going to present our testimony, and Dr. Taylor will speak on a few items, and then we'd be very willing to take your questions. As you know, there are a number of mandate bills that have been introduced so far this session, in addition to the mandates that are already state law. So today we appear before you really talking about a bigger picture as well as the bills in front of you. That bigger picture is one, as I think you all know, the cost of health care is driving insurance premiums to a point that we are losing thousands of people per year to the uninsured rolls. Those people will have no benefits. They will not have office call benefits, they will not have hospital benefits, and they will not have pharmaceutical benefits. So we face a picture that is very bleak in terms of the average citizen in Oregon, unless they have an employer who has a business that has a wide enough margin to continue to cover all of the people that work there. Most employers today are starting to shift those costs onto their employees, at least some of those costs, because very few employers can continue to pay 20 to 40% annual increases in the cost of just one item in their business, such as health care. So it is with that understanding that we appear before you to raise concerns about adding to any costs to the health care costs that are already there. And in addition to that, talk about some of the issues that health plans deal with in trying to determine what they cover and what the value of evidence-based medicine is that would lead to those decisions. And that would be under the purview that Dr. Taylor can discuss. So with that general introduction, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just turn over to Mr. Hagan to present the official testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Leonard Hagan. John has already introduced me. Regents is a not-for-profit insurer domiciled in Oregon that represents roughly one out of every three Oregonians. And I wanted to tell you that Regents, including myself personally, takes no pleasure in opposing mandates. In fact, we often have discussions, should we be opposing mandates? Under this approach of not opposing a mandate, what would happen is, if we didn't and the mandate passed, the coverage would be added and there would be an additional premium charge to cover for that additional benefit. In those discussions, we believe it's an equally unpleasant experience as we watch the number of uninsured in the state increase. As you'll see in my written testimony, and this is an extrapolation from a national number, but for every 1% increase in premiums, approximately 300 Oregonians lose coverage. Currently in Oregon, fewer than half of the small employers, it would be the 2 to 25, purchase coverage at all because they can't afford it. And I'd like to just tell you a brief story about a small employer has 10 to 15 employees in Sutherland. Mark Sterner is the president. It's a bean processing plant. And he told me recently, he knows I work with the Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he was talking to me about premiums, and he said it's very frustrating. He wants to provide coverage for his employees. As few as 5 years ago, he provided full coverage for employees and plus family. He said a couple of years ago, he had to scale back and only provide for employees plus spouse. Could no longer afford to provide family coverage. 2 years ago, he had to scale back and just purchase coverage for employees. He said, Len, for the last 3 years, I've been shopping coverage every year because that's the cycle you get into when you're trying to find cheaper coverage. And he's to the point now where he has to make a decision. Is he going to buy coverage at all for any of his employees? And that's what we hear on a daily basis in this state when we're talking about the price or the cost of health care premiums. So I wanted to share that with you on a general basis. And now to Senate Bill 542. It really breaks or has two components. And what it does is for any individual that's at high risk, it requires that cancer screening be provided. And then it talks about those over 50, and I'm being fairly general here, those over 50, it would mandate routine cancer screening for colorectal and prostate cancer. And I want to let you know that all of our members, speaking for Regents, have coverage now for cancer screenings when ordered by their physician. If a physician says that a particular patient needs a cancer screening test, they get it. It doesn't matter if they're what age they are. For our members that are over 50, talking about the routine, actually not even over 50, but for our insureds, if they want the routine cancer screenings, they can purchase that, but it's at an additional cost. We do have some insureds that purchase that preventive benefit. However, most do not because of cost. what we believe to be the best public policy approach to this is to preserve that choice, allow the insureds to choose to purchase the benefit if they so desire. We also believe it's very important to increase public and physician awareness for colorectal and prostate cancer screening. We've heard that cost is not a significant issue, and the tests are there, they're available. But when you apply it on a broad scale, like we were talking about in the aggregate, cost does become an issue when you apply it on a broad scale, a broad number of insureds. So if we increase public and physician awareness, we believe that will help immensely. I wanted to let you know that I just found this morning, Regents has a newsletter called The Blueprint that's sent out to all of its physicians that we have contracts with. And in this, we remind the physicians of the cancer screenings that are available, specifically talking about colorectal cancer screenings. And that will conclude my testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, questions.
Appreciate your testimony. I have a couple of questions. First of all, you're providing the coverage if recommended by doctors, so you do pay for it if the doctor recommends screening. And that requires no payment on behalf, or no special payment on behalf of the insured.
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, I can tell you that that's a covered benefit. Now, I'm not sure if a co-payment or a deductible might apply. I mean, I don't think that particular benefit or service would be exempt from the standard deductible under the policy. So there might be a deductible or an office co-payment.
Thank you. Are your insured then covered for treatment of the cancer that is subsequently discovered?
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, yes. Yes.
Would you say there's some trade-off then? Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm involved in a dialogue here.
Continue, please.
I'm sorry. Some trade-off in the cost to the insurer for having discovered and perhaps prevented the long-term treatment and radical care.
Again, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that's an ongoing. I'll say there's an ongoing dialogue around that, and there is medical evidence that can go either way. When we're talking about, again, a very large number of routine screenings compared with the number of incidents or cases of cancer that are actually detected. And I'm not going to say too much because Dr. Taylor is here with us, and I'll let her talk a little bit more about that. But that is an ongoing dialogue, and today the medical community is really divided on that issue.
Thank you. I'll reserve further questions until we've heard the other witness.
Thank you. Let me just answer questions.
I would like to make a few comments.
Sure. Just introduce yourself.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cornelia Taylor. I'm a board-certified internal medicine physician. I currently serve as medical director for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon and clinical assistant professor of medicine, not a clinical professor, at Oregon Health Sciences University. As part of that, I work with internal medicine residents. When we see patients together and we discuss, we examine them and we discuss the care that is to be provided to them. The purpose for my being here is to just very briefly present an overview of what the medical scientific literature says on the subject of screening for prostate cancer. And you have, I believe, in front of you two articles that were published in the Annals of Internal Medicine in December of 2003. The first one is called Screening for Prostate Cancer, an update of the evidence for the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. The second one is called Screening for Prostate Cancer, Recommendation and Rationale. the United States Preventative Task Force has done an extensive review of the literature, thus making my job a lot easier to present what the findings of the medical literature on the subject say. I have thought about how to be very concise and to present the most information in the least amount of time, and for that purpose I would like to, if I'm allowed, to just use a direct quotation from the first article that I mentioned. In terms of a data synthesis from the USPSTF, the following are synthesis from the all the data that was reviewed. Number one, there is no conclusive direct evidence that shows that screening reduces prostate cancer mortality. Number two, some screening tests can detect prostate cancer at an earlier stage than clinical detection, which means detection at a time when prostate cancer would become obvious to a physician. Number three, one study provides good evidence that radical prostatectomy reduces disease-specific mortality in men with localized prostate cancer detected clinically, that is, not by screening. Number four, no study has examined the additional benefit of earlier treatment after detection of screening. Men with a life expectancy of fewer than 10 years are unlikely to benefit from screening even under favorable assumption. And finally, each treatment is associated with several well-documented potential harms. So the conclusion that they come to is that although potential harms of screening of prostate cancer can be established by scientific evidence, the presence or magnitude of potential benefits cannot. Therefore, the net benefit of screening cannot be determined. I will entertain questions at this point.
Do you want to continue?
Please.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I appreciate these clinical guidelines that you brought to us. I noticed in the second of those that you introduced to us, it happens to be first as the way they're stapled together for us. It says that the test 10-20% will be missed by the PSA testing alone, and that a biennial test is as productive or beneficial as annual testing. Is that your experience as well?
What that says is that if the screening were to reduce mortality, which has not been established, then testing every other year would be sufficiently good to catch all those that are necessary to be caught. That's what that says. And also it does say that there is a false negative rate for the test, meaning that 10 to 20% of men who have prostate cancer have normal PSAs.
There has been no studies done to show any beneficial cost relationships here, simply because the studies have not been done, or is that in fact the results of the studies themselves?
There has been one very good randomized control study that has shown that screening does not do anything for mortality in terms of mortality from prostate cancer. There are two other ongoing studies that have not yet been finished. They were started in 1994. Their results are still pending. So what that means is that there may be evidence in the next few years whether or not that, in fact, screening is, in fact, a good idea. And it has an effect on cancer mortality from prostate.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Fisher.
Number one, this basically only applies to private insurance. Is that not correct, Bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, that is correct, and with even limits within that, because self-insured plans would not be subject to this requirement. In fact, we were just in a different committee on the House side earlier this week when a certain medical service provider was complaining that health insurance was not paying their bills. And I asked those people if they would please check to make sure that they were insurance companies. They came back and, in fact, have written a letter to the committee withdrawing their need for an amendment because, indeed, they were self-insured plans not subject to the insurance code. So not only would this bill just apply to commercial insurance, in addition to that, it would only apply to about half of the population who has, quote, insurance coverage because self-insured plans are not required to meet the state law in this regard.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You know, it seems to me, in a way, it's more of an educational process than it is anything else. Or more of a person taking upon himself to be a little bit responsible for his own medical care, which many of us aren't for many different reasons. One of them probably the delicate nature of some of the examination and the large bony fingers of some of the urologists and some other rather personal reasons that we don't want to visit a doctor's office any oftener than we have to. This has been a frustrating thing to me as chair of the Health and Human Services Committee for three sessions now prior to this and dealing with this type of mandate because, number one, you don't affect any of the companies or any of the private insurance policies that deal with unions, that deal with self-insured. It doesn't affect the Oregon Health Plan. So basically, we're talking about the potential of increasing it to private insurance companies, many of whom already have some of these things in their policies. In effect, we really don't help many people in the process of doing this. And I would be interested myself in knowing, and I should have probably asked this question sooner, if any of the people testifying previously to this had insurance and whether it was actually covered in their insurance policies or not, or whether they just neglected to go get a checkup. And again, I have mixed emotions on this. I have personally gone through prostate surgery. It was a PSA test that tipped us off. But by the same token, my brother's PSA is much higher than mine. He's had three biopsies, and he doesn't have it. So, agreeably, it is not a test that necessarily shows. I've known of people that have had PSAs as high as 23. That basically had cancer no different than mine and when it was actually diagnosed and went through the pathology lab. So mine was 4 points. That's not a 100% thing. I think maybe something that triggers it more, and I want to ask this question for my own benefit too and working with other people that I deal with from time to time who come to me knowing what I've experienced and finding themselves suddenly in that situation. But it would seem like that a quick rise in the PSA from 1 year to the next or from 1 year, 2 years later would be more of an indication possibly than just the actual number of the PSA itself.
Yes.
Thank you. Actually, there is no evidence to suggest that whatsoever. And you are quite correct in that there is a significant number of tests that are falsely positive. It means that the test is positive when a person doesn't, in fact, have the cancer. And the harms that I briefly mentioned from the testing involve, first of all, the anxiety related to that test, whether or not you have cancer. Second of all, the pain that is inflicted when you actually have the prostate biopsy. It's not a painless procedure. And thirdly, the fact that not all prostate cancers are the same. It's a very heterogeneous disease, meaning that there are some people who have fairly aggressive forms of cancer, and there are some people who have fairly innocuous forms of cancer that without treatment would be fine, like Mr. Starr's father, I believe, where he will die from something other than prostate cancer, not from prostate cancer, because the characteristics of the prostate cancers are so widely variable, and the test itself doesn't help you to identify which one you're talking about. And so therefore, another harm that's due to this is that sometimes you treat benign sort of prostate cancers with fairly significant treatment, and you don't know which, there isn't a test to actually tell you which ones you should in fact treat and which ones you should in fact leave alone, because nothing bad is going to happen to the person who has it.
Thank you. Anything else, John?
No. Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, again, I would like to conclude by simply saying that and reiterating what Mr. Hagen said earlier, again, we're not here in any way suggesting people should not look after their health, that they should not go in to their doctor for physicals. We're looking at a broader picture of the overall availability of health insurance to the broadest number of people can possibly be applied to, with the benefits in that policy being the most appropriately designed benefits based on evidence-based medicine. And that's the way medical directors and health plans try to design insurance products.
Thank you. Yes.
Mr. Chair, just a closing thought as well. I was thinking about this as we were testifying, but you know, there was the discussion about the scope of Senate Bill 542 because it applies to commercial insurance, or it applies to commercial insurance. So you don't have the self-insured plans. You don't have those that can't afford to purchase insurance, and that's why we believe that that's public policy choice is truly public awareness, both in the physician and provider community as well as the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew Clark, would you please come up?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Andrew Clark. I am an Oregonian. I have residences in Salem and in Pendleton. I appear before you today as a prostate cancer affected individual, and I appear as well as a strong advocate of Section 3 of this bill, which deals with prostate cancer. I was diagnosed at age 57, treated effectively until the present date, as far as we know, and I have no cancer-related problems at this point. I feel very fortunate in that respect. The health plan which I had at that point did not pay for routine physical examinations or prostate cancer screening. I am very fortunate in being able to have afforded those myself. An annual physical is part of my normal management. I am fortunate in that the health policy did pay for the therapy once the cancer was disclosed, and I am very, very grateful for that. were I not to have been diagnosed initially and effectively treated, chances are my life today would not be as it is, if existent at all. My view is that prostate cancer screening is a reasonable and effective thing to be required under health insurance policies. The anxiety and pain involved in a biopsy notwithstanding, I consider it a pleasure to have those processes available so that rational decisions for therapy can be made. The point is to find the cancer early and to be able to treat it effectively and at least cost. That being the case, widespread screening is very rational and very cost effective. The number of screenings that can be done in relation to the payment for one course of advanced therapy is many, many thousands. This can be, in my view, an effective preventative towards grossly increased cost associated with expensive therapies. I have been on a panel which distributes research funds for 2 years, which meets in Washington, D.C. each year to distribute funds to research grant agencies. It's distributed through the Department of Defense. And there is constantly work going on which is leading to better and more accurate diagnostics and therapies as well. As those come online, the cost of diagnosis will go down and the effectiveness of diagnosis will increase. Granted, there are false negatives, there are false positives, but with a progression of diagnostics that can be determined, and that's part of the rational, in my view, approach to preventive medicine. I therefore continue to advocate to you passage of this bill. Please pass it out as due pass. It is not expensive, it is effective, and it's unconscionable for an advanced society like ours to not provide this sort of service to a large segment of our population. Thank you very much. I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You don't have state health insurance, the policy that state employees have?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, the policy under which I was operative at that point was one which is through the school districts. My wife is a teacher, and that is the policy under which I was covered at that point.
And?
Further questions?
Yes. Is that a private policy, or is that a policy that is self-insured, or is that just a private policy or union policy? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, it's a Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon policy.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to wish Mr. Clark continued good health, and thankfully you're here and cancer-free, and thanks for testifying.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Andrea Clark, would you come up, please? Okay. I'm Courtney Dresser. I'm sorry, Courtney. Andrew. Wrong square. Yes, Courtney.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Courtney Dresser. I am the Oregon Advocacy Manager for the American Cancer Society. With a great deal of assistance and help from Representative Garrard, Representative Jensen, Senate President Courtney, and Senator Morissette, we are proud to bring this bill forward to you today in your committee. I also want to take just a moment to thank the volunteers from Eastern Oregon who have traveled a great distance to tell their stories and on a daily basis educate and support others who are facing prostate cancer. Senate Bill 542 ensures necessary insurance coverage to men and women over 50 years of age and men and women who are at high risk for colon cancer to receive coverage of several colon cancer screening exams, including a colonoscopy every 10 years. The bill also ensures coverage to men over 50 years of age and other men who are at high risk to receive prostate cancer annual prostate cancer screenings, including a PSA. A few numbers for you. The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2003, 105,000 people will be diagnosed with colon cancer, and 57,000 of them will die from the disease. In Oregon, that's 1,700 men and women, and 700 people will die in Oregon from colon cancer in 2003. For prostate cancer in the United States, almost 221,000 men will be diagnosed and 28,000 men will die from the disease. In Oregon, that's 3,200 men being diagnosed and 400 of them dying. These are estimates that can be changed. These are numbers that we'd like to see diminish. We are working on a three-prong attack to do this in the American Cancer Society. First, we are educating patients and consumers of the screenings available to detect cancers and the need to do these screenings in order to detect the cancer early. Especially in regards to colon cancer, having a colonoscopy actually can stop cancer. Polyps can be removed during the colonoscopy, causing the polyps not to be able to become cancerous. We also educate physicians on the American Cancer Society guidelines, screening guidelines. Just recently we sent out to all the physicians in this state guidelines and information on colon cancer. And finally, we work to ensure once we have done this education process that when these consumers go to get these preventative screenings that they're covered. PSA testing became available in the early 90s. Since then, prostate cancer deaths have decreased, which is why the American Cancer Society and the American Urological Association and the National Comprehensive Cancer Network support early detection screening, which includes an annual PSA exam. The cost range from $40 to $70, depending on the market. However, the cost to treat prostate cancer can start at $50,000, and as you've heard from some of the folks, survivors, can go a lot higher, including $300,000. If prostate cancer is discovered in the early regional stages, the five-year survival rate is 100%. And as you've heard, prostate cancer at first shows no symptoms, so the need for testing is imperative. In regards to colon cancer, the CDC conducted a nationwide behavioral survey. Of those surveyed over the age of 50, only 39% of Oregonians had a sigmoidoscopy, which only covers about half of the colon. In the past 5 years, and only 28% had the fecal occult blood test. In a recent study of patients that participate in colon cancer screenings, many cited that they're aware of the need to be screened, but don't do it due to an absence of insurance coverage. Colon cancer is the second only to lung cancer as a cause of cancer-related death in the United States. The beginning stage of colon cancer has no symptoms, as prostate cancer does. The only way to detect the cancer early is to get screened. Many health insurance policies do not cover colonoscopy, which is considered by many physicians as the gold standard in colon cancer detection. Many of these health insurance companies only cover it if the patient is medically necessary or is at high risk, and even those definitions change from policy to policy. The American Cancer Society commissioned the Lowen Group to examine the Federal Employees Health Benefit Program. That's about 248 health insurance companies that participate in the program, which covers over 9 million Americans across the United States. Only 3% cover a colonoscopy every 10 years. In 2001, the Health Insurance Association of America acknowledged that health plans currently are not providing coverage for the full range of screening tests. The report states most private insurers will only cover colonoscopies for high-risk populations. The Lowen Group, which you guys have a copy in your folders there of this study, analyzed the cost per member per month to add colonoscopies every 10 years for the appropriate consumers plans that already cover the FOBT and the flexible sigmoidoscopies. The cost was 11 cents less per member per month. Basically, it costs very little to add the colonoscopy as a preventative screening test, not a medically necessary test, but as a preventative. Meaning that adding the gold standard of colon cancer screening would actually only cost 55 cents per member per month. In comparison, annual mammograms cost about 75 cents per member per month. The American College of Gastroenterology Conference, a presentation was done on colonoscopies and the cost to have them covered. The results indicated several things. First, if colonoscopies were covered, colorectal surgery would be reduced by more than one half and a cost savings of $1 million. Second, chemotherapy and radiation treatments would be reduced by one half, saving $39,000. Third, cancer deaths would be reduced by one half in a 10-year period, resulting in a cost savings of $222,000. 28 other states have a law like this in place, very similar. In 1999, Missouri passed a similar law. Their fiscal note from their legislative research committee showed the potential cost savings of $10,000 for each cancer detected in the early stages, compared to the $40,000 to $50,000 per cancer detected in the late stages. The note states, the long-term savings resulting from early detection could be substantial. Health insurances, covered items and services, co-insurances, and other co-pays do affect care-seeking behavior. Limitations on covered benefits should not be impeded one's ability to receive life-saving, cancer-preventing screenings. The legislation places insurance health plans on a level playing field, and it allows for cost-effective screening measures to be available to all that need them. And just some testimony in regards to what's already been said. There is, I guess where the word controversy could be used in regards to PSAs, but we also have four people behind us who are survivors or dealing with it because they got the PSA. The American Cancer Society has, for years and years, tracked the amount of cancers and the sites that they are developed and the amount of deaths. And we know that with PSAs and education about getting a PSA, we see that the mortality rate does decrease. That, to us, is a strong indication to keep the test out there and keep doing the research that is being done to find other and better ways or more necessary ways to stop cancers early and detect them early.
Chair?
Yes, Senator Fisher.
You know, I respect statistics when they're properly used, but you're quoting numbers of the entire state population. There's absolutely no breakdown on it. The gist of your testimony is I'm supposed to believe that every one of these people have a private insurance policy that doesn't pay for it, and that's not true. I know that some of those people that have died of cancer, that are getting this cancer, belong to the Oregon Health Plan. I know that many of them have insurance policies that do pay for it. There's many of them that don't have any insurance policy at all that just won't help. And what I would like to know is how many of those actually have a policy that does not pay for that, and that is the only reason they didn't get it, that they can't afford to pay for it outside of it. That's where we need to make our decision, because I'm here to tell you, I know Mr. Higgins, people that he's talking about down there. He came up here all the way to see me to talk about this very problem because he is in an anxiety situation over not being able to afford insurance, continue to give it to his employees. I also, in my own family, have people that are running a business that are in the process again of trying to make a determination of what they can offer and still manage to maintain a viable business. And they have well over 100 employees. And to put people off the insurance, to reduce 3,000 people every time we raise insurance costs 1%, doesn't take much to raise the cost 1%. And we're not talking about 1% increases out there. We're talking about far more than that over the course of just the average increase in insurance, let alone adding new mandates. Now, I think if I remember right, you said there were something like 1,700, and 300 or 400 of those died in the state.
Mm-hmm. For prostate cancer.
Of those 1,700, again, how many actually would be helped by Senate Bill 542? That's what we really need to sit down and say. If we're only going to help 100 out of the 1,700, and we're going to lose 3,000 people off of there, we got to figure out how many we're actually going to benefit, how many we're throwing off of health care insurance completely. And I maintain that to have some health insurance is better than none. And again, how many of those people that have and are able to work at a job that can't afford to pay that, how many of them can't afford to pay for a screen test like this? So my feeling is a lot of this does with education and what a person is going to say, I need this or I don't need it. Because I know specifically in my case, I have insurance policies that would handle some of these things, and I personally have not taken advantage of them for my own personal reasons. And it's not because they're not being paid for. So I'm not certain that, you know, it's really easy to say, boy, if I'd have had something rather, when you finally wind up in the face of music. And I can say that personally because I wound up and had to face the music. And I'm not saying that the PSA test wasn't a great thing in my particular case. It was. But I've also got to sit down here as my physician. I'm not a cancer recovery patient or somebody that's potentially facing something else down the line, but as a legislator, and what I do that affects the lives of many, many more people than just a small few that we deal with in some of these bills, and that's the quandary I'm in.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Did you want to respond to a question that he asked?
I think very early on there was a question. Chair and Senator Fisher, and I thank you for your comments. For the American Cancer Society, we do not pull these guidelines out of thin air. There's studies, there's research, there's doctors who provide us with these guidelines and help us develop what is the best thing to stop a cancer or to prevent a cancer spreading and to get a cancer at an early stage where it is almost 100% survival rate. To do that, we also have to look at everything else, and we understand the cost-effective nature of insurance companies. However, when you look at doing an exam that costs $40 or adding a colonoscopy to an insurance plan, which would be about 11 cents per member per month, or if you're going to look at having surgery to remove your colon and to live with medications for the remainder of your life, which is covered. Those things are covered. Once you get the cancer, it's all covered. Your treatment's covered. But for me, and I think a lot of folks would say this, I'd much rather have the very uncomfortable colonoscopy and have the polyps removed and know that I have a much better chance of not having to go through a surgery and the cost there. And if you're looking at insurance companies, I understand that mandates do add, but I would have to say so does not getting the test. That's going to add costs to these to these insurance companies, especially as we get more and more people reaching the age where these guidelines start taking place. We get more and more people reaching the age of 50 where they're going to have to start having these exams, and if we're not doing our job on all fronts, the American Cancer Society, which is educating them on these and also making sure that the legislation is there to provide the insurance coverage, we're going to see an increase in insurance premiums in that case, because these people are going to be getting cancer and not getting it at an early stage, and we're going to have to pay for all their treatment costs. So I think, you can look at it in all different ways. There's doctors in all different playing fields who are going to say one thing to another. I mean, that's just the way of medicine, I think. But in regards to pennies and cents, it makes more sense, and you save more pennies if you have a preventative exam that can stop the cancer early, where your treatment is a less time and your treatment costs, than if you catch it at a later stage and you're spending a great deal more money.
Mr. Chair, I have no argument with that. But we're not talking about saving the world here. We're talking about one little tiny segment of a population.
Now, is that a question?
And the question is, again, can you tell me how many people that are in this insurance category bracket that 542 deals with come down with cancer each year? That's what we need to know, not the whole total number. I understand about catching things in advance. I know about preventive maintenance and things like that, not only in the human body, but in machinery operation and so forth. But we're dealing with a situation here that may deny people any coverage of any kind at all. We have to pick up the charges on that, and believe me, that's not cheap.
Yeah,
and that's where I need to know how many people actually are in this insurance bracket, because I know people that don't have any insurance at all get prostate cancer and colon cancer. I know that people that are on policies that we can't do, people are on the Oregon Health Plan, are part of the statistics that you give me. And if you keep very careful records, then you ought to be able to tell me how many people are affected in this category. And that's where I have to make my decision.
Okay. Now, we're going to take a brief answer, and
yep,
we're going to move on. We have two other people who may be able to answer some of those questions. So,
according to ORS law, we have to do a mandate insurance questionnaire, basically, whenever you're going to do a mandate bill, which you have in your folders.
Okay.
The author of that bill, which was a research person on our behalf, tried to get the information you're asking for, contacted the lobbyist of the insurance company, and asked for this information. Who's covered? Who has to pay more to get a preventative exam? Who just doesn't pay anything except for a copay? We tried to get that information, and these insurance companies do have that information, and we were not given the information. So, yes, there was an ask to these people, including Blue Cross Blue Shield, for that information. Only two companies, Pacific Source and another one, gave us the information. And out of one of them does cover the PSA and most of the colorectal exams, and they cover about 150,000 people in Oregon. One of them, though, has a $250 yearly, I guess, $250 is your top amount you can spend on preventative exams. So colonoscopy would not be under the $250 because it's cost more than that. So there was, again, like I would just say, there was an outreach to all these folks to try to get them this information.
Okay. We are going to move on, and we're going to hear this again. We'll have another public hearing before we have a work session. It'll give us time to take a look at this. I will look at, personally, the effectiveness of the test, that the screening that was raised, and I do have questions about that. I appreciate the information that you brought with us. And
Mr. Chair, when you're looking up information, could you possibly look at it if there's 1,700 people here that have this in each year, or however many it is, can we at least go by the population of the state and somehow break this down and find out if the insurance companies don't know how many of these people are uninsured or not covered or however it is, how many people are covered by private insurance, and can we divide that by the population and figure out the percentage of people so that we know approximately the numbers that we're dealing with
here? Are you taking notes?
We'll get it.
Good. Thank you. Peggy, would you come up, please? And Barney Spade, would you also come up? You are the last two to testify, and Barney may have a partial solution. I don't know. Barney is the answer man. Peggy, do you want to go first?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. For the record, Barney Spate with Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente is a prepaid group practice model HMO that serves about 450,000 members in Oregon and Southwest Washington, and we've been doing that for about 50 years. I'm here today both on behalf of Kaiser Permanente and the 750-plus physicians with the Permanente Medical Group, with whom we have an exclusive reciprocal relationship. The points I would like to make, Mr. Chairman, about Senate Bill 542 don't relate directly to the nature of the mandate in either Section 2 or Section 3. They do relate, however, to the nature of the statutory basis of laying out what the screening tools should be in the case of colorectal screening and the frequency of screening both for colorectal and prostate. The information that I've gotten back, and I've asked some of our physicians that are involved in both the development of our prevention guidelines and our evidence-based guidelines for in the Permanente Medical Group to comment on the bill. And I first like to point out that Kaiser Permanente does cover colorectal and prostate screening. The responses that I received, however, was a deep concern that the bill memorializes into statute both the screening tools and the frequency of screening, in which there remains a great deal of scientific debate about who should get the screenings, at what age, how you define risk populations, etc. My purpose today is to suggest that if this bill, if you feel that this bill should move forward, that I would like to work with the committee on developing a process in which the statute would not necessarily lay out the specific screening tools and frequency, but that that could be delegated to a state agency that has a committee of physicians and others involved in it, because this science is changing. And I think some of the reports that were passed out by those who testified previously, specifically the Annals of Internal Medicine report, indicate that this continues to be looked at by both the U.S. Prevention Task Force and other healthcare organizations about trying to get it right. Well, that is, what is the frequency and what is the best tool to make these prevention screening techniques work for the largest number of people? That's the basis of my testimony, is that I think that there are some constructive amendments that could engage the medical community, the American Cancer Society, and others so that we don't memorialize into a statute, if you will, medical standards that are fast changing.
Thank you, Barney. Questions? Okay, you have some language.
I'd be happy to work on some of that, some language, Mr. Chairman, and I will do so with staff.
You know, in hearing the testimony today, I have questions, and you know, that may even get to Senator Fischer, some of his questions about numbers and who and so on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Annett, and I represent the Health Insurance Association of America. I sort of tread lightly in the sense that I think I've discussed these kinds of issues before the committee. And what I had talked about before was the need to have as I had suggested, a more rigorous process in looking at the mandates because of the medical issues. And specifically, I was referring the last time to the PKU. But it's very clear in terms of the issues addressed in 542 that there is research debate as to what should be the appropriate screening and techniques. I see two different issues between the prostate cancer screening and the colorectal cancer screening. The one in the prostate cancer screening, I think, is that there's more ambiguity in the efficacy of the screening techniques. In the colorectal cancer screening, I think early detection clearly is beneficial. I think the more significant issue in that case is whether or not people want to go in and have the screening, the colorectal cancer screening. And as part of the testimony that I handed in, I included an article from the Oregonian that talks about a blood test that they're actually that's under development for detection of colorectal cancer screening. And in there is a quote which you hear anecdotally over and over again, but it also has been researched, is that one of the major issues is that men are not inclined to go in and have the cancer screening. I mean, that's more, in my view, from conversations and from talking to different carriers, that's a bigger deterrent to actually having screening than the issue of coverage. And this U.S. Preventive Task Force that Barney just referred to, and that was also referred to in the Blue Cross Blue Shield testimony, I also attached, there are a couple of segments in there that I think would be helpful for you to review. And one is titled The Accuracy and Reliability of Screening Tests, and the other has to do with the effectiveness of early detection. I think they shed some light onto the discussion and the testimony that you've heard already. And at least with regard to the accuracy and the reliability of the screening test, for example, with regard to the colonoscopy, it talks about many patients will have polyps detected or removed on colonoscopy, but only a minority of those would have developed cancer. And so when you get into the debate of trying to mandate these kinds of screenings and then mandate a schedule, you run into the medical debate, and you run into the situation of putting a standard into statute, which in my view across the board is, you know, inappropriate legislative action. The issue that John Powell referred to, the bigger picture of the health insurance, I handed out a table that I've discussed with some of you that looks like this. And what that is that reflects the number of people in Oregon, the policyholders that are actually subject to the insurance code. And we're seeing a decline in those numbers. And we all know how price sensitive health insurance is now. And particularly in the individual market and the small group market, that's where these people are really getting hit with their major health insurance premium increases. And it is the big ticket items, and it's the incremental items, and it's just the rate of inflation that is making these people revisit whether or not they can actually afford to offer coverage. On the large group side, you all are well aware in collective bargaining debates, and probably the most recent example was the Portland school teachers issue, where the biggest issue in settling their potential strike was the cost of health insurance and how they're going to deal with caps. And when you see 20% rate increases and realize what that translates to in terms of potential out-of-pocket payments over the next couple of years, you realize that we really do have to deal with the big picture when we assess this. And if we're going to deal with specific mandates, we need to be sure that the information, we're not locking ourselves into a medical standard that is, may not even be the best medical evidence at the time, but you certainly don't want to be locked in down the road to a set of standards that are in statute. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And needless to say, I do have lots of other information if you would like to see it. My layman's take, though, on the research that I looked at was that distinction between the prostate and the colorectal cancer screenings, which I actually categorize them separately in terms of how I look at the information that's available. And I think it's more of an educational thing on that colorectal cancer screening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Others wishing to testify? Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing, and we will bring this back, and perhaps with some new twists to it. And I appreciate the information that was given, and I'm personally hoping we can move this along. My hope. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I make a comment?
Yes.
I would be remiss in not putting on the record that Mr. Luesler Fitch and I have been close acquaintances for over 50 years, that we went to school together in college. We traveled down a lot of roadway together, and it's been a pleasure to see him here today, not in the circumstances under which he appears, but I have very much enjoyed the opportunity to visit with him shortly today, and I'm thankful that he's here with us.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we will close. There's no. Did we-